This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So we just were talking to a friend of ours who's rather tied to Gopher Sports. The Trib had a big story today about Gopher tickets. Down enormous, Adam. I mean, it's...
28%?
Yeah. I mean, just in... Listen, men's hockey is a huge part of the drop, right? Now, men's hockey is not going to bring in as much as the other ones. But, yeah, you've got the number right there. Ticket revenue for Gopher Sports fell by $8 million, a 28% drop to $20.5 million last year in 3 years. Now, we hear all the same stuff, and a lot of it's valid, right? You've got television. You got so many ways to do it.
Millennials are cheap.
Millennials are cheap.
I was just waiting for it. I just figured I would say it.
Let's get it out of the way.
Yeah.
The product stinks. The product has stunk.
Well, the hockey one, the Big Ten, right? I mean.
Yeah, the Big Ten one, but now the Big Ten is actually good.
Yeah, but it's still, it's not North Dakota, and it's not UMD.
Back in my day.
Not St. Cloud State.
We're allowed to evolve.
Didn't we have
three Big Ten teams in the Frozen Four this year?
We did. I'm not knocking the league at all, but I'm not saying you remove those traditional rivals.
Yes.
And it's going to be a while before we establish, you know, a new ones outside of, you know, Wisconsin, if both teams are good, but that hasn't been the case.
No. So, Lindsay, we've talked before about Gopher football. You still love Gopher football. They're going to play Thursday. They like playing this Thursday during the fair. I don't get it quite as much myself. What would you do? I mean, they give away student season tickets on a regular basis. They're begging students to show up. But it's an issue across the country because the story points out, and Rachel Blount did an excellent job, Clemson, which is outside of Alabama, the most dominant football program in the last 3 years, they give away their student tickets, and they're not even sold out. So what would you say to the 20, 30, and 40-year-olds who feel like this generation has passed them by? It's not completely accurate, too, because Mason had some good years. Kill had some good years. But the perception is, why should I pay any attention? They haven't been any good since the 1960s.
Well, and that's the problem, is that students go to the University of Minnesota. So when I went there, we still played games at the Metrodome. And I say we like a total...
Bronco? Was Bronco playing at that point?
Yes.
Bernie
yes.
Bierman?
No. And fortunately, my freshman year was Lawrence Maroney and Marion Barber. And
that's
so
a
it was
great
exciting.
Year.
You're
yeah.
like, God, they, you know, they were doing really well. My sophomore year was a little bit better. It was Glenn Mason years. I think a big issue is that students go to the University of Minnesota. They attend some things, but then the university doesn't do a very good job of keeping young alumni interested. And a lot of it is price. I mean, you look at what a season ticket, if you could get one to men's basketball at the Barn, it's very expensive. But then you go to a game, like say, you know, I've gone with friends, we'll get single tickets or we'll do a group and get a, you know, we're up in the nosebleeds, but there's 30 of us.
Yeah.
And you look at the lower bowl and there is a very dominant group of older Gopher supporters.
Yeah, I mean, let's just be honest. The demographics of Gopher sports right now are 65 and older. It is a huge percentage. And those folks don't have to be ashamed one bit for showing up.
No, not at all. And if they didn't, they'd be empty.
Exactly. And if they don't spend that money, they'd suffer. But, you know, two things. One, Norwood Teague raised those ticket prices, feeling like he could take advantage of, you know, Jerry Kill's popularity. It backfired completely. And then they continue to struggle, because I think you nailed an important point. How do they get those 20, 30, and 40-year-olds to go? I mean, you like sports. What would convince you to go to – I still think Williams is a phenomenal place. I love going to Williams.
Yeah, when they're winning and the place is rocking, it's probably the best venue in town.
It still is. I mean, even without new everything else, Williams is my number one favorite. But TCF Bank, when it's just kind of a meaningless game, and I'm not writing this guy off at all. He's not for me, but he doesn't have to be for me. He's for 18 to 22-year-olds, and if I had to bet right now he's going to succeed or fail, I think he's going to succeed. I really do. Now, that doesn't mean Big Ten championships, but I'm starting to buy in a little bit. But I don't know if the crowd is going
to
buy.
Well, and that's a part of the issue. So in my circle of friends, I would say half went to the University of Minnesota. So when we want to plan something, say, go for homecoming, it's easy to get half of the people to say, sure, I'll shell out money for the tickets. My closest girlfriends didn't go to the U of M, and I'm saying to them, hey, we want to do this thing on Saturday, and tickets are $40 to $50, and they're not emotionally invested in it. It's hard to get someone to go to something
But people will spend it for the Wolves. They will spend it for the Wild. They will spend it for the Vikings. And those teams have had down years. Now, the Wolves struggled for a long time. But even then, they still were getting 12, 13, 14,000. It's daunting. You know, because if the thing is, Lindsay, if they make the prices too low, then they get more people there, but the revenue situation is no better. So, and some of the ideas, I give them credit for trying. I don't think it's going to be the solution myself. It is 2:08. What we're going to do is, after we hear from Laura and after we hear traffic and weather, we're going to take a break. And then just before this documentary came out, For Whom the Bell Tolls, on the remarkable life of John McCain, and it came out just before Memorial Day, we chatted with Teddy Kuhnhart, and his entire family did this to this entire documentary. Excuse me?
It's George.
I apologize.
Yep, the whole family.
Yeah, that's right. It was George. We did this about 4 months ago. That's on me. It's Peter, Teddy, and George Kuhnhart, who's a great interview, and we wanted to pay tribute to Senator McCain multiple ways today. But George Kuhnhart is going to join us as we replay this conversation about the time they spent with him and talking to other peoples with their just reverence for Senator John McCain. That's coming up after traffic, weather, and this news update from Laura. Memorial Day, and we looked at a lot of different ways that we could talk about Memorial Day. And then about 10 days ago, as I like to do, I'm watching TV and I'm watching HBO, and I see a preview of a documentary about a man who's led an extraordinary life, John McCain, For Whom the Bell Tolls, and talked to Lindsay, and we reached out to the team behind it, and they're good enough to join us. It's really a family that is behind this. The Kuhnharts are with us, Peter Kuhnhart, Teddy Kuhnhart, and George Kuhnhart is our guest right now. George, thank you so much for your time. Your families, I just was telling you off air, has been involved in a lot of great pieces of documentary and journalism. Tell me, once you realized that the diagnosis was out on Senator McCain, how you decided to approach this and how you put it together in such a short amount of time.
My pleasure. Well, Chad, thanks for having me. The way that the film started was, once we read in the New York Times about the senator's diagnosis, my brother Teddy called my father and I and said, listen, I think I have the next idea. We should do the same thing we do with Senator Ted Kennedy, which we did in 2009.
Right.
We should do a film about the senator's life and what it means. So we called HBO, and Richard Plepler said, I love it, let's do it. He put us in touch with Mark Salter, McCain's longtime collaborator and co-author.
Right. Sure.
And Mark, he helped make the connection happen. Within 3 weeks, so we read the article in mid-July, and we had been in contact with the McCain team and family at the end of July. Within 3 weeks, toward the end of August, we were out in Sedona interviewing the senator and getting the project started.
Did Senator McCain have any reluctance at all?
I don't believe he did. His family sure did.
Okay.
So Teddy was on The View last week, and on air, Meghan McCain said, listen, when the three of you came out here, I have to tell you, I know your work. I really was skeptical. I didn't know. It is a very personal film. We know how great that you guys are at producing documentaries, yes, especially with a sensitive touch. But this is our family. This is my father, who is a terminal illness, and letting you in is a very scary thing. And she said, "You knocked it out of the park, and I can't thank you enough. It's helped. It seems like it's helped bring their family closer. It's helped. It's been a very good thing for the family, which they all appreciate."
So much of his life, George, as you know well, has been covered and chronicled in books.
Sure.
And literally thousands of stories about the 5.5 years of hell, the multiple elections on the presidential side, you know, where he stands as a Hawk, his openness to challenge. What did you want to provide different here, you and your brother and your father, that hasn't been done about John McCain yet?
There are multiple things, but I think the thing that stood out to all three of us unanimously, without even we've been talking a lot about this lately. We said, what do we take from this film that we really think the viewer should know? It's John McCain's consistency. He's had the same message, yes, there have been certain topics that he's changed, such as the Confederate flag in 2000. He said it should be a state's issue, but then he comes around and says, no, it's not. It's bigger than that. But his central message of country first, it's about America. It's not about the individual. It's about bipartisanship. It's not about left to right. It's about everyone working together. That I really think we uncovered that John has said the same thing all along, and it's a very refreshing approach. He's a very, very decent guy, someone who we enjoyed greatly being around, and I think that the way that he approaches everything, he has a very clear head. He's very determined on how he does it, and he knows what he's doing, and he's very smart about how he does it. And I think we were happy to discover that throughout the filmmaking process.
George Cunhart is with us, along with his brother Teddy and his father Peter. They combine on the producing and the directing on a documentary that I am greatly looking forward to. Very, very good reviews already. This family said such a great track record of great documentaries. George mentioned on Ted Kennedy, I told George off air how much I loved the Ben Bradley documentary that was on HBO a couple months ago. John McCain, For Whom the Bell Tolls, premieres tonight, 7 o'clock our time. Can you tell our listeners how the senator saw the documentary and what his reaction was?
Absolutely. So about 3 to 4 weeks ago, Teddy flew out to Arizona. They actually had a screening at the Arizona State State University Institute. And my brother Teddy went to the hospital, sat with Senator McCain, previewed the film, and at the end of it, John took Teddy's hand and said, "You nailed it. Thank you so much, my friend." And so there's no...
Pretty good.
No greater experience in the world. I wish I was there, but I, as I was telling you off air, I just had a son, and it was the exact same day that Teddy was in the hospital with Senator McCain, so it's pretty amazing.
We were very fortunate timing-wise to have this interview on the day that the documentary premiered. We're playing this interview with George Cunhart again because of the horrible news over the weekend that Senator McCain, his life ended after a remarkable life at the age of 81. Much more coming up after this pause. In fact, we're going to start with Adam Carter talking about his great trip to Spain with his great company, Colette.
Yeah, thanks very much, Chad. I traveled with Colette last year. We went to Ireland. It was fantastic. Colette does it right. Now, a lot of people think, okay, group tour, you're on a bus, you're with a bunch of people, you got to go with them, you eat with everybody, you see everything. That is not the case. Certainly, there are group events, but there are things catered to your needs on this trip. And we are going to Madrid and Barcelona in Spain next April. We leave April 11th. It's an 8-day trip. 10 meals are included, 3 nights in Madrid. Then we take a high-speed train across the Spanish countryside to Barcelona and enjoy 3 more nights in the captivating city of Barcelona. Again, 10 meals included, unique foods, unique wines to this region of the world. You can't miss it. It's a great price. Check out the trip. Call Colette, 800-581-8942. The booking number on this, 880-875, or just log on WCCORadio.com/Colette.
Let's get right back to our conversation. This is a fantastic documentary. I felt like it was a must-watch, and then Lindsay was so great to get the Cunhart family. It's in particular, this is George Cunhart, and they put together this documentary on John McCain, spending time with him, spending time with people who respected him. We initially played this conversation on Memorial Day, but with the senator's passing, we thought this would be another opportunity to play it. Let's rejoin our conversation, and don't forget Dean Phillips is going to join us in about 10 minutes. So take me through. You mentioned right at the start, and I thought that was very interesting, about some members of the family were reluctant, but eventually the senator won him over and the family was won over. When you're at his home in Sedona and he knows what he's in for, this former brain cancer, it is terminal. It's just a matter of when. His good friend Ted Kennedy had faced this. What were those moments like? I mean, just take me through that.
Sure. I mean, I think the time that we interviewed him, since it was so recently after his diagnosis and he knew what he was facing, I think we have a very different approach, a different interview than we would have done 2 years ago, for instance. This
sure.
is a man giving the most reflective interview he's ever done in his life. He is sitting there, warts and all, telling us everything. And I mean, we filmed him in Arizona for 3 days, and we went to D.C., filmed for another 3 days. We filmed B-roll. I mean, we have hours and hours of material with this man. And he was smiling. He was energetic. There were definitely times he just said, I need a couple minutes, and overall, you wouldn't have really known how much is going on. I mean, he let us in as more than anyone else, but I'm sure there are things that he doesn't express how—he says how he's feeling, but he's a strong guy. I mean, his doctors told us that he can withstand 8 times the pain tolerance of any human being.
Wow.
That this is a man who—
Wow.
Which is an amazing thing
yeah.
to say about someone.
Sure.
And it says a lot.
So let's talk about the revelation that for the folks who saw it initially, or maybe just the news clips, is getting the most buzz, where he says publicly, who knows how many times he said it privately, sure. but publicly he says for the first time, going back to the vice presidential selection in 08, that he should have selected Joe Lieberman, his good friend, former Democrat, then moved independent, someone he had traveled the world with along with Lindsey Graham, instead of listening to his advisors and picking Sarah Palin. Does he talk not just about that, but what that Palin pick has turned into now with the rest of the party and really with the opening for now, Donald Trump?
We did talk a good amount about it, but it was more, I mean, he knows, I'm sure he knows what it spawned into, and he's the first to say, he thinks Sarah is a perfectly nice person, but we purposely didn't interview her because they don't really know each other that well. They knew each other for a little stint in period, so it's hard to kind of get the whole story across. But he really would have thought, he really thinks that Joe Lieberman would have been the answer to this. I don't know exactly how much he would say that decision has led to where we are today. We never got exactly those kind of
sure.
words out of him. But so I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he's definitely cognizant, and he does wish it was a little bit different than what happened. I mean, I know that.
His most vociferous critics will talk about his hunts
yeah.
in almost all yeah. areas of the globe. And their point is, agree or disagree, that's up to folks, that anytime there's a conflict, Senator McCain is, let's send troops, let's go there. As not as much diplomacy, not as much standing back, it's we have to put troops or use our weaponry involved in that area. How does he deal with that part of his life?
Well, he's a man whose grandfather was a four-star admiral. His father is a four-star admiral. This is a man whose life is in the military. So I'm not exactly surprised that that's his first instinct. Is he believes country first. He believes in he does believe in war. He believes in that's how to fix a conflict. And he operates different. So, I mean, he's a very polarizing figure in that sense. A lot of people say that's a terrible approach. Some say that's the only approach.
Yep.
But he's, again, going back to my first thing, he's very consistent. It's not like one thing. He's felt the same way about any war and any military intervention because that's what's ingrained in his soul and his mind. Because he's at the end of the day, his life is in the military and the Navy, and that's just all he knows and what he preaches.
Among all the politicians over the last 20, 30 years, whether it's a Democrat and the love from Republicans, or in this case, vice versa, to me it seems like McCain is at the top of the list, where you have so many huge Democratic names who have spoken out either about their friendship, their respect. You interviewed many of them for this. What stood out about those conversations?
Oh, my God. That was one of the highlights of the film and filmmaking process, was meeting some of these people like Barack Obama and Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton. I mean, when Teddy and I went to interview Secretary Clinton, we were skeptical. We said, is she real? How can they really be that close of friends? I mean, we understand people say it, but we were skeptical walking into the interview. within a minute, you could see how much she loves John. And same with John. I mean, when we interviewed him and asked him about Secretary Clinton, he lit up. This is a genuine affection and care and friendship between across the aisles, which is unbelievable. And there's no one that epitomized that more than Joe Biden. We drove to his house. He let us into his kitchens, opened up the fridge. He said, take whatever you want. Anything for a friend of John McCain's, a friend of mine. And he, because of his son, Bo, and that relation, and how he died of the same cancer that Ted Kennedy had and that McCain is suffering from, there was a special bond where when he saw Teddy and I show up, two brothers, it reminded him of Bo, and he opened up in a way that no one has ever seen before. And his whole team was like, we're blown away about the access and just his comfort level with us, which we think was a unique thing for everyone.
George, your family's work is fabulous. I have no doubt I'm going to greatly enjoy this documentary on Senator McCain, John McCain, For Whom the Bell Tolls, when I watch it tonight. Thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on your baby, and I'm sure a pass across down the line. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
George Cunhart with us, along with his brother Teddy and his father Peter, behind John McCain, For Whom the Bell Tolls, 7 p.m. HBO tonight. Many people believe the 3rd district race for Congress will be the most competitive race in the state, one of the most expensive across the country. Earlier in the show, we had a chance to chat with Congressman Eric Paulson. The man who is challenging him, representing the Democrats, Dean Phillips, is kind enough to join us. How about a round of applause for Dean for stopping on by? You just were telling me, sir, about your love of the state fair.
Oh, a deep
It's a borderline love. Obsession.
It is. It's. I wish we had a good treatment facility in Minnesota for that.
Yes.
47 out of my 49 years, I've come, Chad. In fact, my mother's in the audience right now. She can attest to that fact.
Well, you just showed me a very young picture of you out here. So when you come out here, let's say you're coming out here just on your own with your significant other, and it's not while you're running for office. Where do you go? What's on top of the list?
So I'm a little bit of a fair geek.
Okay.
I'll confess.
Okay.
So I have to do the newspaper museum. I have to do the Pioneer Cabin.
Okay.
Have to do the slide.
The slide for sure.
And those are three kind of core fundamental parts of my.
Have you been on this? Have you been on the slide yet this year?
No. I figure if I make it through this interview with you, it's right across the way. I'm going to go on the slide because that's a good way to celebrate.
Facebook Live, put it out.
You know, some people say I'm going to go to Disneyland.
I'm going to go to the slide. So last Tuesday, you and Congressman Paulson had a chance to debate. I was lucky enough to moderate with Tom Hauser. What was your overview of how that went?
I thought it was a spirited debate. It was the first opportunity I've had in a year and a half to be with him in a somewhat of a public format and to talk about the issues. And I thought it was a great opportunity to do so. Obviously, we see things differently. And I just hope there are more opportunities to do the same because we need to allow voters to see candidates in person. There's way too much money in this era spent on television advertising. And I think we have to return to the time when candidates would be in front of voters and ask questions. And the more the merrier.
I asked Congressman Paulson about that 2 hours ago. He said he's reached out on 3 different debates. Is that correct?
I've been asking Congressman Paulson for a long time to appear in public together. In a public, accessible forum at which anybody can come and anybody can ask any question on their minds of both of us.
He said those were your campaign events and didn't feel like those were fair.
And the way I see it, and the invitation stands, any time he's willing to appear in public, it can be at the fair, it can be in any public place, that anybody can come and anybody can ask questions of us that's not curated and not premeditated. And I think that's what we should do more of, and that I'm always open. I will clear my calendar.
So... And certainly your supporters agree. I believe Tom Hauser from At Issue has asked about one NPR. So are those locked in and then you want more or are those even set yet?
I'm not sure if that is set, but I'm certainly willing to do it. I think one of the distinctions is that Congressman Paulson is indicating that he wants ticketed events so that each campaign can allocate tickets, 50% of the tickets. My contention is that they should be open to anybody without a ticket, and they should be available to the general public. It's pretty simple.
But you did, isn't it fair to say you had more supporters last Tuesday?
Well, it sure felt like it.
Yeah. I mean, the crowd was that way. Among the areas where you are sparring the most, and this has been a large issue for years, the element of money and the elements of PAC. He pushed you on the possibility of funding, of cell phone. I know Tom Hauser asked you multiple times. You said, I believe, and you can correct me, that I'm not going to commit to not using any of my money because then I would have to campaign with my arm behind my back. It wouldn't be fair. If he would change his approach with PACs, would you change your approach about the possibility of using any of your own money?
Yeah, so Chad, in the very beginning of this race, or at least many, many months ago, I proposed running this campaign in what I call the Minnesota way, which is a return to how we used to do things in this country. And that means eliminating all PAC and special interest money, eliminating self-funding, and also eliminating all the outside money that's flowing into this race. And what few people know is that about two-thirds of the money spent on federal races in this day and age come from outside interests that have absolutely no interest in my districts, and that's the big problem. So I've asked him to sign it on a number of occasions for over the last 4 months. It's very simple, because it does preclude self-funding and PAC money and outside spending, something that he challenged my predecessor, Terry Bonoff, to do in 2016. And in 1997, he wrote legislation that would have banned PAC money from races. So it seems to be up his alley, and I'm hoping that he still signs it. So that's my proposition.
He said earlier, because I want to get you to respond to some of these things, just like I would have if you would have went first, he said that you're playing it both ways because there are PAC events, even one tonight, taking place where they are benefiting you. Is that true?
Well, it's interesting he would say that. The event tonight is an open to the public voters forum. The subject is campaign finance reform, and I think the PAC to which he's referring is called End Citizens United, which is a PAC designed to address the corruption that is caused by money in politics. So Representative John Sarbanes is coming into town to participate, the president of End Citizens United, and Ryan Winkler, state representative, is going to be here as well. And we're going to talk about ways that we can reduce the influence of affluence in our public discourse and politics. And at the end of the day, I think PACs and all the special interests, both spending and influence, is very troublesome for our democracy. And I think we need to take steps to reduce that on both sides. I'll be the first to admit this is systematic. It is not a Republican issue. It's not a Democratic issue. It is a systematic American issue that we have to collaborate on. And that's what I'm proposing we do.
Are you benefiting, though, financially from this event tonight?
Absolutely not. I do not take $1 in any special interest PAC money, period. That doesn't matter if I believe wholeheartedly in what they believe in. I refuse the money because the money corrupts and it affects the outcomes of legislation, and we have got to do better. So, no, I do not benefit by $1.
Okay, healthcare. Let's talk about that. And I phrased this some way in the debate last week, but it's still so germane. When then-President Obama passed the Affordable Care Act, many Democrats were elated. Felt like that this is something that this country was decades behind other countries. Now a lot of the energy is behind Medicare for All, to take it even further. There's a bit of a split, even as an example, Angie Craig, who is challenging Jason Lewis. She was here on Friday and said she would vote no on Medicare for All. She doesn't think it makes sense. She doesn't trust the government. Why not try to perfect the Affordable Care Act philosophically versus Medicare for All? Which way do you want it to go, and which way do you think it will go if the Democrats do, as many people predict, gain the majority in the House?
So when I talk with people in the 3rd District, which is just every day, there's almost unanimous agreement that we should be a country that ensures that people have access to affordable health care when they need it. The fact that we're the only developed nation in the entire world that doesn't ensure that is troublesome to a lot of people. So I want to see us reform our system to ensure that everybody has care. I also believe in choices, and I believe in competition. So I'm somebody who, first, as you just said, I believe we should fix the ACA because it does have benefits to this country, there's no question, but it also needs to be fixed, and that requires collaboration. I believe in the notion of Medicare as a buy-in option for everybody in this country. I own a small business. Anybody who does know it's very hard to afford insurance for employees. If we had a thoughtful, easy-to-understand, affordable national option and still allow private insurers and nonprofit insurers in the market to compete, that would help people. And then furthermore, the stronger the Medicare and by the way, that's a buy-in option. That means people pay for their insurance. Medicare becomes stronger, can start negotiating pharmaceutical pricing, which would save tens of billions of dollars to all of us taxpayers. And then lastly, perhaps the most important element, is reforming our care delivery model in this country, because we have an incentive structure that only provides rewards to hospitals and clinics for doing procedures and hospitalizing people. We have to reform the system so that we have incentives to prevent people from becoming ill in the first place. And when we do that, we will no longer be the world's most expensive purveyor of health care.
Can you do both? Because there are some individuals who are Democrats, too, who say, you know what Dean said there sounds good, but unfortunately, the way the system works, if we don't go completely Medicare for all, some of the financial ideas that he has and others will not work truly. So can you do both? Can you stay within the confines of the Affordable Care Act and then still offer up some of the important ideas you just mentioned without cost getting too prohibitive?
And I think the answer is absolutely. And I, as I said earlier, I believe in choices. And this is the United States of America. If people choose, if Medicare is the best option available to people and they choose it, the program will grow naturally. And I think this is a great example of where Republicans and Democrats can agree. If you afford people choices, as long as they have access to them, let people decide what is best. And if Medicare becomes the best plan for most people, the proof will be in the pudding and people will select it. And I think that's the way to migrate forward, because there is not a possibility in this day and age, with a Congress comprised the way it is right now, that we can achieve anything unless we both agree to let people make the decisions. And that's why I think this is the best approach. It's called Medicare Extra. It's a proposition from the Center for American Progress. It's available online to anybody that wants to read it. And I think it is the most thoughtful and achievable way that we can move forward and become world class.
Dean Phillips is with us, 3rd District DFL endorsed and the primary winner, challenging Eric Paulson. Eric Paulson on earlier. Among the more testy parts of the debate last week involved health care, and then Eric Paulson said that you're being hypocritical because that at one of your businesses you don't cover insurance. And then when you said yes, he said that's only because you're now in the race and because a story was written about it. Clear that up. What is the truth?
That's just it's a mistruth. He knows that. I've been in business for 25 years. A number of enterprises. We have been. It is a core principle of mine and my family's to ensure that we take as good a care of employees as humanly possible in the communities in which we do business. From Phillips Distilling to Talenti Gelato and now Penny's Coffee, I'm very proud of how we take care of people. And that means we have covered hundreds of people for their health insurance. As a family, our philanthropy has covered thousands of people who wouldn't have access to care if we didn't help out, and other philanthropists. And Penny's Coffee, when I said we didn't provide care for our employees, at that time we were just opening one shop and the employees were my two partners and me. I buy insurance on the individual market. One partner has a plan on his wife's plan, and the other had another business he received his insurance from. Once we had full-time employees, we created a plan that's a very thoughtful one, and we do have insurance
so
for full-time employees.
As soon as you had other employees, they were covered right away.
For full-time employees, as most businesses do, we provide a thoughtful plan. But my argument is that for part-time employees and for so many people in this country, access to thoughtful and affordable insurance is almost impossible. And we have got to make changes. And the fact that this Congress has done nothing, nothing for decades to rectify this problem is, in my estimation, a dereliction of duty.
Part of what has been positioned against Eric Paulson for a while is the percentage of votes that he's tied to the president. He continues to come back and cite stats where he's worked with others that he's among the top people. You in the debate last week said that if you should win, you would not vote with, you would not vote for Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. Give the folks listening right now, because the 3rd District has been known as an independent area where they want Democrats to work with Republicans and vice versa. Can you give me an issue or two where, to be frank, you lean more right and that you might be more inclined to vote with Republicans on an issue than where most people assume a Democrat would vote?
Well, you know, I look at traditional conservatism. And there's a lot I agree with. In fact, I'm a historian. I love political history. I've been looking at a lot of Minnesota 1950s, 60s, and even 70s Republican campaign literature, and you'd be amazed at how thoughtful it seems relative to this day and age. And there are some things. Tariffs are a perfect example. I believe as a business owner that the only way that everybody can do better in this country is if we afford more resources to middle-income Americans and we ensure that we have access to markets overseas. And that's why the tariffs that President Trump is enacting right now is a abhorrent use of his tools. That's an area where I would agree. I believe in free trade, but it has got to be fair trade. That would make me a little bit more right-leaning. And I also believe that it is not mutually exclusive to be pro-business and pro-labor. I am both. That's been my entire career. And I think we need more thoughtful discussion about how both political parties can satisfy those needs by working together. And that makes me a little bit of an outlier in the Democratic Party. But frankly, there are not a lot of business people on either side of the aisle right now. And I think we would be a more thoughtful Congress with a little bit more diversity of background.
We'll finish on that one. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. A round of applause for Dean Phillips for stopping on by.
Thanks, everybody.
We'll reach out to both these individuals throughout the rest of the campaign. 53 past 2. We'll wrap up the show in a matter of moments. Lindus Construction Time Check is 2:56. Time to learn why Lindus has served over 75,000 happy customers since 1979. Lindsay, real quick, we had a man named Bob who was here during Adam's show and had some health issues, had some hydration issues. Paramedics showed up, ambulance showed up, and then 2 hours later he comes back here to see the show.
Champion. That is a champion.
Man, what a remarkable gesture by Bob. Thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow we're having a debate, Donald Trump and Barack Obama, both here on the veranda. Lindsay's assured me that's going to happen. If not, Lindsay will buy beer for everybody at the fair if that does not happen. I'm a professional liar. Let's go.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.